chosen for his subject, the words we speak we will indeed be blessed by his words.
Thank you, Brother Paul, and good morning, brethren. We're very glad to be with you this morning. And our lesson this morning will be taken from the third chapter of James. We're going to read from the third chapter of James, verses 1 through 12. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which, though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. I think you will recognize immediately that our lesson this morning has to do with the great harm that can be done by evil speaking and the great difficulty we have in controlling the use of our tongues. James, in the passage that we have read, points out that the tongue is a very small part of our body, and yet how much trouble it causes. So much trouble that James says that if we offend not in word in the use of our tongue, we're a perfect man. We don't think James is intending to tell us that this is the only area where we have any difficulty. We have difficulty in other areas too. But he is saying, he does say, in many things we offend all. But he's pointing out that this is one area where all of us have a great deal of difficulty. James then proceeds to use several illustrations. Illustrations showing the power of little things. Just as the tongue is a little part of our body, and yet what great power and influence it exercises, he gives us several illustrations to show this in other ways. First, he uses the illustration of a horse. We know that a horse is a very strong and powerful animal. And yet, man has learned how to control the horse. James refers to the bits that we put in horses' mouths. He's referring to the fact that by putting a bit and using a harness in a bit in the horse's mouth and using a harness, man is able to cause that horse to obey him. He's able to cause that horse to do work for him or to transport him from one place to another, wherever he wishes to go. Now, this may not seem very important to us today, but I think we all realize that for many years, horses were man's primary source of transportation. Horses were man's primary source of power for agricultural use. If a farmer wanted to plow a field, he had to use a horse. If a man wanted to travel from one town to another, the fastest way he could get there was on horseback. Now that horse is much stronger than a man, and yet by a very small thing, a little bit in the horse's mouth, a man who wasn't particularly strong, or even a child, could drive that horse and cause that horse to do what he wanted. James uses this to illustrate how a small thing can have a great influence. And he uses that in connection with the use of our tongue. Then he speaks of ships. The kind of ships that James was talking about isn't the kind of ships that most of us are familiar with. He was speaking of sailing ships, which were in common use in those days. And these ships could sail in various directions. They weren't limited to sailing in the direction in which the wind was blowing. By proper use of the sails and also the use of a rudder, they were able to control the direction of the ship. Now this rudder was a comparatively small thing. If any of you have seen the rudder of a ship, if it's a large ship, the rudder is of considerable size. And yet, in comparison to the size of the ship, the rudder is very, very small. Now today, we're not too much concerned with sailing ships as far as travel. We have cars and trucks, large steamships, and airplanes, other means of travel. But in all of these, there is some sort of mechanism which controls the direction in which that vehicle is going to go. And that instrument is comparatively small. The one we're most familiar with is a steering wheel on a car. You control the whole car as to which way it's going to go by manipulating the steering wheel. Now, the steering wheel is very small in comparison to the size of the whole car. And yet what a great influence it has on the operation of the car. Likewise with other modes of transportation. Again, illustrating the great influence of something small. And James says, this is the way it is with our tongues. Then he adds in verse 5, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. This too is an illustration. He's, we believe, referring to how forest fires might get started. Or we might apply it this way at least. We know that forest fires can be started in various ways, and very often forest fires are started by just a carelessly discarded match or cigarette, or perhaps a small campfire which was abandoned and not entirely extinguished. And this very small spark or very small fire grew and until it enveloped a large forest, perhaps thousands of acres of forest land, and endangered homes and lives as well. Now, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And so it is with use of our tongues. Just a very few words can have such far-reaching effects, either for good or for evil. James adds, the tongue is a fire. In the same sense that a small fire can start a great big one, so the tongue is a fire. And James adds, it's a world of iniquity. It is a world of iniquity because it is used to describe every kind of iniquity in the world. It's just a small part of the body. And yet, careless words, sometimes insinuations, dropped into the minds of those who might be disposed to evil surmising and evil thinking, are like small matches dropped in a pile of dry leaves in a forest. How great a matter a little fire kindleth. Then in verse 6, James adds, it is set on fire of hell. The word hell here is the word Gehenna. We've learned that Gehenna is a symbol of the second death. Does this mean that every time we speak something improperly, well, that's it, we're going into the second death? No, we don't think that's what James means. But if we stop and think about it, before any evil words are spoken, the thoughts must enter the mind and be entertained there, at least briefly, until the words are expressed. Now, if these evil thoughts are entertained frequently enough and long enough, after a while they become part of our characters. And if this is persisted in often enough and extended to enough areas, it's not too difficult to see how this could ultimately lead to the second death. And so James puts it properly. It is set on fire of Gehenna, the second death. In addition to this, evil words which we might speak may arouse similar thoughts in others who hear them. They may arouse thoughts of retaliation on the part of others. Or they might defile their characters in time. And they ultimately might be led in the direction of the second death as well. And so this is a spreading effect, leading ultimately, if followed to its ultimate conclusion, to the second death. And so James says, it setteth on fire the course of nature. It's a spreading thing. Now in verses 7 and 8, James uses yet another illustration, that of taming a beast. We know that many wild beasts can be very dangerous to man. We know that many serpents are very, very poisonous. And to some extent at least, man has learned how to deal with these animals, how to take them into captivity, keep them under control, and keep them from harming him without necessarily using violent means. This reminds me of an item I heard in the news recently. Perhaps some of you heard it as well. There was a man in Africa who, just for the sake of setting a record, I believe, went into a cage with I don't know how many deadly poisonous serpents. It was quite a number of deadly poisonous serpents, and he was to remain in that cage, I think, for several weeks. And he was going to set a world record for remaining in this cage with these serpents for a long period of time. I think he would only come out about 10 minutes every so often so that he could eat or something like that. And he had to be very careful while he was in there and not move very slowly so as not to alarm these serpents, because if one of them would have bitten him, it very likely would have been fatal. But this man had learned how to deal with these particular serpents so that he wouldn't excite them, wouldn't cause them to harm him. He did this for a considerable length of time. I don't know if he's still doing it or not. James adds that the tongue is likewise full of deadly poison. From one standpoint, the tongue is more deadly, more poisonous than those deadly serpents. If one of those serpents had bitten that man may have died. But if that had happened, that man would have died, he would have had a resurrection in the kingdom. That wouldn't have been the end because of the Lord's plan. But if we follow the influence of evil words to their ultimate conclusion, the second death, from that there will be no resurrection. So those evil words spoken by our tongues are more deadly than these poisonous serpents. Evil speaking is a very common thing in the world. Perhaps one of the most prominent examples we all know of is during political campaigns when candidates are running for office. Most candidates won't hesitate to say anything derogatory about their opponent, whether it's true or only partly true or not true at all. Most candidates won't hesitate to express it publicly if they feel it will get them votes or hinder their opponent from getting votes, help them win the election. Perhaps they reason the end justifies the means. Nevertheless, this is evil speaking. This is so common that during political campaigns, it's more or less expected. In the business world, likewise, evil speaking is very common. Very many businessmen won't hesitate to discourage prospective customers from dealing with their competitors, and won't hesitate to say something unkind or derogatory about one of their competitors so that they can get the business rather than the other party. Sometimes they will make false claims about their own products or falsely criticize the product of someone else so that they can get the business. This too is a form of evil speaking and is very common, so that when we hear advertisements, when we hear businessmen making claims for their products, we can't really be sure that what they're saying is true. In our everyday associations, we find that people are very selfish. Most people are concerned first with their own material welfare. Most people won't hesitate to speak evilly of someone else if they feel it will further their own interests. Now, how can this be? Well, we might give a couple of examples. We might observe that somebody is doing something very foolish, something really stupid if you stop and think about it. And then you observe this, and the first person you see, that you tell them about it. You call it to their attention. Look what so-and-so has done. That was really a stupid thing to do. I wouldn't think of doing anything like that. In effect, is what you're saying. In effect, you're saying, well, look how wise I am, and look how unwise the other party is. This is really a form of pride. Or we might notice somebody doing something dishonest or immoral, and we might be unable to refrain from telling the first person we see about it. Oh, look what so-and-so did. That was a terrible thing that person did. I wouldn't think of doing anything like that. And again, it's the same principle. We're showing how righteous we are in comparison to the other party who has done something unrighteous. In my particular work, I had to do with a lot of truck drivers. And I guess truck drivers have a reputation for being rather crude and rough characters on the whole, and many of them are, that's true. I don't know that they're really any worse than any other segment of society. Part of my job is dispatching trucks and assigning work to these drivers, and there's a lot of competition among them. Certain trips, certain drivers like. They would like to be assigned certain loads and certain trips, and they very much dislike certain other ones. And there's a lot of competition to get the ones they prefer. And the drivers, most drivers, won't hesitate to say something derogatory about one of the other drivers to show that that other driver isn't as good a driver as I am, or he's more careless than I am, in order so that he will be favored and get the more desirable trips and loads. And this is very common among the truck drivers I'm in contact with, and I think it's common to most other segments of society as well. But we're talking about the world. James is not talking to the world. James is addressing the brethren. We like to read verse 1 from the Revised Standard Version. He says, "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, for you know that we who teach shall be judged with greater strictness." Notice he addresses my brethren. James is addressing the brethren, and especially the elders. Now, as a matter of principle, evil speaking is wrong for everybody. In principle, it's wrong, regardless of who does it. But it's even worse for the brethren, because they have made a covenant with the Lord to do His will. And so they are much more responsible for the words that they speak. than is the world. Elders have an even greater responsibility because, in a more particular sense, they represent the Lord and they represent the church which elected them to be elders. And if they speak words which are improper, if they engage in evil speaking, it reflects not only upon the elder himself, it reflects upon the church who elected him as an elder. And in a sense, it's a reflection upon the Lord as well. Now, what is evil speaking? Just as a broad and general definition, we would say evil speaking would be words spoken which are injurious to someone else. Words which might damage the reputation of someone else. Unkind words. The motive for evil speaking may not always be the same. Evil speaking may not always take place with a motive for a desire to injure somebody. It may simply be carelessness or thoughtfulness, but it's still evil speaking. Perhaps you've had the experience, I know I have, of having a brother or sister say to you, "Well, I don't wish to evil speak of brother so-and-so, but..." And then they go on and say something which is in fact evil speaking. The fact that they preface this with, "I don't wish to evil speak of this person, but," indicates that, well, they don't really want to hurt the person. They don't really want to speak evil, but they just can't resist telling the thing which they shouldn't say anything about. The fact that they don't want to be considered guilty of evil speaking doesn't change the fact that it is still evil speaking. Perhaps they, by thinking, if we preface it with, "I don't wish to evil speak," well, the Lord won't count it that way, or the person we're talking to won't consider it that way. But nevertheless, it is still evil speaking. Does this mean that we can never criticize anyone? Well, let's consider a few things which are not considered as evil speaking, which we wouldn't consider evil speaking. In James 4:11, we read, "Speak not evil of one another." And in Titus 3:2, the Apostle Paul says, "Speak evil of no man." But notice he doesn't say, "Speak evil of no doctrine." He doesn't say, "Speak evil of no creed." False creeds and false doctrines are to be condemned. It is not evil speaking to criticize, condemn, refute doctrines and teachings which are untrue, which are false. That is not evil speaking. But the personalities and the individuals associated with these creeds and doctrines are to be kept separate from the doctrines themselves. For example, a brother might give a discourse. I'm giving a discourse right now. Other brethren will give a discourse today after me. Perhaps you may agree with everything you hear. Perhaps you may not. Perhaps you may hear something in one of these discourses that you won't agree with. What I'm saying publicly. What others after me might say, they will say publicly. This makes it subject to public criticism. If a brother says something in a discourse publicly, it is public knowledge. And to criticize what the brother has said is not evil speaking, unless it can be evil speaking, unless the criticism is done in a sarcastic manner, in an unkind manner, in a manner which attributes a wrong motive to the brother for saying what he did, then it becomes evil speaking. But if we're just criticizing what the brother says because we don't agree with what the brother said, that is not evil speaking. Then we're criticizing the teaching, the doctrine. We're not criticizing the brother himself. We must never criticize the character, speak evil of the character of someone else because we disagree with what he has said. But we can, and we should voice our disapproval of anything which is said publicly which is untrue. Another example of things which we wouldn't consider evil speaking. Suppose you're sitting at home and looking out the window and you happen to see a robbery taking place across the street. What should you do? Well, you'd call the police. You tell them, I see a man robbing the store across the street, or holding up engaging in a holdup across the street. You better send the policeman out to apprehend the criminal. Well, you might say, well, I couldn't do that because I'd be evil speaking against the one who's committing the crime. But this wouldn't be evil speaking. You wouldn't be injuring anybody. By having that criminal apprehended, you wouldn't be injuring that criminal. In fact, you'd be doing him a favor so that he doesn't continue to do that sort of thing in the future. Or perhaps you're at work, and the company you work for has certain work rules. I know where I work, one work rule is that there are certain areas in the plant where smoking is strictly prohibited. And there's a good reason for this. Well, I feel there's more than one good reason. I think smoking should be prohibited altogether, but that isn't the only reason. This company uses some highly flammable material in the manufacturing process, and certain areas, for this reason, to avoid the possibility of a serious fire, smoking is prohibited. Now, suppose I were walking through the plant and I would see one of the employees smoking in one of these areas. I wouldn't consider it evil speaking to go to that man's foreman or supervisor and call his attention to it so that he deals with it in the proper manner. I would feel that I would be doing that person a service and doing all the other employees a service by doing that. That wouldn't be evil speaking. But now, if I would do that in the wrong way, then it would become evil speaking. If I simply go to the foreman and say, well, I just saw so-and-so smoking in that restricted area, and leave it at that, leave him to deal with it, that's not evil speaking. But if I would go to the foreman and say, well, I just saw this man smoking, and you know, I think he's just trying to get even with you for something you did last week, and he's trying to show that he can get away with something that nobody else can. I think he's just a smart aleck. If I would put it that way, then it would be evil speaking. Then I would be doing more than reporting the infraction of the rules. I would be speaking evil of the person's character, even though that might be true. Even though that might be true, it would be wrong for me to say that. Evil speaking can take various forms. One form is slander. Webster's definition of slander is the utterance or spreading of a false statement or statements harmful to another's character or reputation. Legally, slander is spoken as distinguished from libel, which is written. Now, Brother Russell's definition of slander is slightly different from this. This is from reprints, page 5122, where Brother Russell defines slander as anything uttered with the intention of injury to another, whether the statement be true or false. I don't know. I'm not an attorney. I don't know what the legal definition of slander is. Both the Webster's and Brother Russell's definitions agree to some extent, to the extent that injury to another is present in both. But Webster says false statement. Brother Russell says whether it's true or false. While Webster's definition limits slander to false statements, we can see that according to the Christian standards of love, the intention to injure would be wrong whether the statement is true or false. Now, when we think of slander, we usually think of some big scandal or something. That's something really important that we relate in the life of someone else. But slander doesn't have to take that form. Sometimes slander may begin with a little incidental statement made with a slight tendency to lower someone's opinion of someone else. And then this might grow and become a big thing. Maybe it's just a little seed of slander at first. And yet, in time, it grows to a great root of bitterness, which is very difficult to get rid of. Let's consider a hypothetical example of how this could be. Suppose you have a friend, you call him Mr. A. He goes in, you go with your friend into a store, and he makes a purchase, and the merchandise he purchases costs $4.95. He gives the clerk a $5 bill, and you happen to notice that the clerk gives him 15 cents change. Of course, he only should have gotten 5 cents change. But your friend just sticks the change in his pocket, and you start to walk out the store together, and while you're leaving the store, you call to your friend's attention to the fact, didn't that clerk give you 10 cents too much change? And your friend says, yeah, I noticed it too, but I think I'm entitled to it. This store's prices are too high anyway. I shouldn't have even bought that item here. They make plenty of money. They'll never miss the 10 cents. I need it more than they do. Besides, it's too much trouble to take it back. Well, you don't like this idea too much. You think your friend should have taken it back because you're a Christian. You're trying to be honest with everybody. But you're still friends. This is just a little thing. It's only 10 cents. Now, later you have another friend who's Mr. B. And you're talking with Mr. B, and you happen to mention this incident to Mr. B, and you say, well, my friend Mr. A, he's a real nice fellow. I like him a lot, but, you know, I don't think he's quite as honest as he should be. And you relate this incident to him about he got too much change and didn't return it. And then later on, Mr. B tells the same story to Mr. C, and he doesn't get the story quite straight, and he adds a little bit to it. And Mr. C tells it to Mr. D, and he distorts it a little bit more. And it gets passed on from one party to another, and finally the story reaches Mr. K, and you meet Mr. K on the street one day, and he says, what's this I hear about your friend Mr. A? He's a bad character. He's a really dangerous man. I hear he's a thief and a robber, and he always carries a gun. The police are looking for him. And I hear he's even threatened to kill his best friend, who happens to be you. So you see how the story started out as something very small and grew into something very large. Closely related to this would be gossip. What is gossip? Webster defines gossip as idle talk about other people's affairs. Now, gossip is not necessarily evil speaking. If it's just idle talk about other people's affairs, that's not necessarily evil speaking. And yet, with fallen man, it very often leads to evil speaking, unless we're very, very careful. We'll cite another example of how this can happen. You're out in your yard one day, you're talking to your next-door neighbor. We'll call your next-door neighbor Mr. A. And Mr. A said, did you notice Mr. B mowing his lawn yesterday? And your neighbor says, yeah, I sure did notice him. I believe he bought a new lawnmower. And notice so far, this is just idle talk. And yet there hasn't been any evil speaking. You just mentioned, well, you noticed your neighbor was mowing the lawn the other day. Oh, there's nothing wrong about that. And your neighbor says, yeah, I saw him, and I believe he bought a new lawnmower. Well, there's nothing wrong about that. It's really none of your business. It's just idle talk, but so far it's not evil speaking. But then you say, yeah, I believe he bought a riding mower at that. Well, still, there's nothing wrong with that. There's still no evil speaking. But then your neighbor says, well, yeah, he can afford luxuries like a riding mower, but he always says he can't afford to buy his wife a dishwasher. I think he's a rather selfish individual. Now you see, the idle talk has degenerated into evil speaking. Now you're not only talking about something that's none of your business, you're attributing a selfish motive to your neighbor. And then you add, well, Yeah, I guess he is rather selfish. It wouldn't surprise me if he soon makes his wife mow the grass also. And I think he's not only selfish, but he's lazy. And so you see how one thing leads to another. It started out as just idle talk and slowly, gradually degenerated into real evil speaking. Many people do this unconsciously. In one article we read where Brother Russell says that for some people, gossiping is as natural as breathing. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Some might feel that by telling about a scandal, that they're doing something good. They might feel that by telling about something wrong that somebody else has done, they're preaching against sin. And the human mind is very deceitful along this line, trying to rationalize and justify things that, which we say and do, and really saying, well, by telling about this, I'm really condemning it. I'm really preaching against sin. But really what you're doing is evil speaking. So we should examine our motives for the things that we say. What should we do when we hear evil speaking? Well, we'll suggest three things. First, if it is in the form of gossip, don't spread it any further. The process of repeating it will no doubt distort it and exaggerate it. You saw how it was in the example we cited. And this could work a great injury to all concerned. The second thing, if you hear evil speaking, if it's something relatively insignificant and merely borders on evil speaking, try to change the subject before it becomes more serious. And the third suggestion is, if it is already something serious that has been said, if it's already in the form of a false accusation or something really slanderous about someone else, then we'll have to say something about it. If we don't say anything, if we just simply nod our head or shrug our shoulders or just remain silent, the implication may be that, well, yes, we agree with what has been said, and I guess it was all right to say it. But in this case, it might be necessary for us to do more than just remain silent, but to remind the one who has said this thing of what the Scriptures say about evil speaking, and suggest this person examine his motives for the thing that he has said. The tone of voice in which something is said also has to do with the words that we speak, and that the words that we may speak are proper. The way in which we say something is very important. Our words might be very true and very right, and yet if they're said in an unkind manner, they can be very injurious. On the other hand, our words might be evil, and no matter how softly they're spoken, it is still evil speaking. We might say something which is all perfectly true and right, but the tone of our voice indicates that we're being sarcastic about it. We're being unkind about it. We're really doing injury to somebody else by what we're saying. Or we might say something that is wrong, and we might just whisper it. Perhaps you've had this experience too, where somebody leans down close to your ear and whispers something which is derogatory about someone else, as though they realize this is something they shouldn't say, but if they say it softly enough, it won't matter too much. But let us remember that the Lord has excellent hearing. They don't want anybody else to hear it but the one whom they're speaking to. But the Lord hears it, no matter how softly they say it. On the other hand, the words might be good. They might be the word of the Lord. Yet they should be spoken kindly. Hebrews 4:12 says that the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. This is true. And since this is true, we don't have to add bitter words or unkind words to enforce the word of the Lord. Let the word of the Lord speak for itself. We don't have to add our own unkindness to it to get the point across. Rather, as the Apostle Paul tells us in Ephesians 4:15, to speak the truth in love, that we may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. Our words should always be true. And if our words are always true, and others get to know us, that they can count on the fact that our words are true, that we mean what we say, it won't be necessary to state them forcefully or to swear to them for others to believe us or to get the point across. Now, what is so bad about evil speaking? We said it was very common in the world, so common that it's just about acceptable. Wars have been fought and people have been killed and injured because tempers were aroused among leaders of nations. Whole classes of people have been persecuted because of things which were evilly spoken about them. For example, all through much of the gospel age, the Jews were accused of killing Christ, and this was taken as an excuse that it was all right to persecute anyone who was a Jew because he was a Christ killer. Riots have been incited by evil words. Lawsuits have occurred. Domestic troubles have resulted from evil speaking. Evil words embitter the lives of many. So even in our associations with the world, it is very important to avoid evil speaking. When in their company, we're going to come across evil speaking. They're going to say evil things about others to us. But if we in turn don't approve of their evil speaking, indicate our disapproval, and don't join in their gossip, we will be considered peculiar. And this is the way it should be. We will then have fewer worldly friends, and that will be to the benefit of the new creature. But why is evil speaking so harmful among the brethren? Well, first, it is harmful to the one who engages in evil speaking. He's harming himself. We're still in the flesh, and the flesh is selfish. The flesh takes pleasure in denouncing the weaknesses of others in order to hide its own weaknesses. The flesh likes to give the impression of having a superior character. But the law of love says we must try to hide or conceal the faults of others rather than try to expose them. And so we're injuring our own characters when we engage in evil speaking. The second reason it's so harmful is that the Lord considers it a serious offense. 2 Peter 2:9-10 tells us that the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. But chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government, presumptuous are they, self-willed, they are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. And the dignities we believe that Peter is speaking of are those whom God has honored and has set in the body as members of the body of Christ. These are the dignities. And the context indicates that persistence in evil speaking about the brethren, as well as other offenses, would ultimately lead again to the second death. And third, the injury that would result to the person who is evilly spoken about. Sometimes evil speaking results from misunderstandings. Some of this could be avoided if we follow Jesus' advice in connection with Matthew 18, verses 15 to 17. I think most of us are familiar with it. That if we are offended about something, we first go to the brother alone and discuss it with him, try to reach a reconciliation. And if this fails, then take two or three witnesses and go to the brother again and see if the matter can be reconciled. And if this too fails and if the matter is important enough, then take it to the church for a decision. But one of the hardest lessons we have is that when something like this happens, if we're offended about something, one of the hardest things is to go to the person who we feel has offended us. It's so much easier to go to somebody else and tell somebody else about it. It seems to be very difficult to go to the person himself. And yet this is the instructions the Lord gives us. And much of the misunderstandings could be avoided if this were followed. Is evil speaking ever justified? We would say very rarely. Suppose someone has said something evil about you. Does this justify you in saying something evil about him in return? Surely not. See that none render evil for evil to anyone. The only exception we believe would be where you would rather not speak the evil, but it is necessary because someone else would be injured if you didn't. We'll try to consider a couple of examples along this line. First, if you knew of a crime being committed, we referred to that before, that this wouldn't be evil speaking because we're trying to protect somebody else from being injured. Or suppose you had been swindled and you're neighbor was contemplating doing business with the same person who had swindled you, and this one wasn't a legitimate businessman. It wasn't the case that you just thought you made an unwise purchase. It was somebody who evidently deliberately had cheated you, and you knew that your neighbor was contemplating doing business with the same person. Under that circumstance, it might be excusable to tell your neighbor that, warn him that it's not too wise to deal business with that person. Another case that might arise is, what about a brother whom you know is teaching a false doctrine? And you have some influence with someone who is not too well grounded in the truth, and you're afraid that this person might be influenced by the person who you know is teaching a wrong doctrine. Would it be justified to point this out to your friend to protect him? Well, perhaps it may be in some cases, but we should be very careful about this. We feel that the best protection we can give anyone against the false teaching of false doctrines by others is to teach them the truth. And if we teach them the truth so that they can become well-grounded themselves, then we don't have to worry about the influence of others upon them, because they will be able to recognize the error for themselves. And so this is the area where we should concentrate upon. And I think we should be very reluctant and very careful about warning others new in the truth about other individuals. At times it might be necessary, but I would say very rarely. Now, gossip and slander aren't the only misuses of the tongue. Saying or preaching anything which one doesn't really believe would be a misuse of the tongue. One might do this, elders in particular are subject to this, in order to receive the compliments of others. A brother might give a discourse, and he might say what he thinks the audience wishes to hear, so that he might receive a lot of compliments afterwards. And this makes him feel good. But this is a misuse of the tongue. We're not to speak what others want to hear. We're to speak what the Lord wants us to speak, and that which is true, whether others are pleased to hear it or not. We feel that boasting is a misuse of the tongue. This is an indication of pride. We're in effect saying, oh, look how great I am. And so this is a misuse of the tongue. We feel that using clever words to win an argument would be a misuse of the tongue. You know, the Pharisees tried to do this with Jesus, and without success. We'll consider one example. In Mark 12:13, it says, "And they sent unto him certain of the Pharisees and of the Herodians, to catch him in his words. And then they asked him, is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? And Jesus replied, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. It's human nature, if we're involved in a discussion in which there are two points of view or a difference of opinion, to want to win the argument. We all like to feel that, well, we won the argument. But to use clever words to win the argument, and maybe we don't even believe what we're saying ourselves. This is a misuse of the tongue. It's far more important to speak the truth and to be helpful to someone than it is to simply win an argument. We might win the argument and fail to accomplish our objective altogether. And now the last area we want to consider this morning is, how can we control the use of our tongue? James indicated at the beginning that it's a very difficult matter. And we can't do it thoroughly and completely. But we'd like to suggest 5 points briefly, suggestions as how we can better control the use of our tongue. The first one is to think before you speak. Hasty and impetuous words cause a great deal of trouble. Consider whether the words will glorify God or dishonor God. Consider whether the words will stir up good thoughts or evil thoughts in the persons who are going to hear what you say. Matthew 12:36 says, but I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. Our day of judgment is now. We should give our account daily through prayer, asking for forgiveness for anything which we said or which was dishonoring in any way to the Lord, anything which was harmful to anybody. This is how we can give an account daily. The second suggestion we have is to avoid meddling in the affairs of others. This very frequently leads to evil speaking, as in the example we cited earlier. We usually have as much or more to handle with our own affairs that we don't need to meddle in the affairs of others. The third suggestion is that we endeavor to avoid evil surmising. Evil surmising is attributing some selfish or evil motive to what somebody else has said or done. 1 Corinthians 13:5 tells us that love thinketh no evil. In other words, love doesn't evil surmise. A heart filled with love would try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt rather than try to attribute an evil motive to someone else. It would rather surmise the favorable than the unfavorable. And if we don't think evil of someone else, we're much less likely to speak evil of them. The fourth suggestion is, follow the golden rule. Do unto others what you would have them do unto you. We don't like others to gossip about us. We don't want others to slander us. So we don't want to gossip or slander about anyone else. We wouldn't like others to speak evil of us, so we shouldn't do the same to them. The Lord would rather have us to make a mistake in being too lenient than to just simply be just. But rather, we are to be loving in addition to being just. And the fifth and most important suggestion is the heart attitude. And this is really the only way to approach the problem at its root. This is the most important. Luke 6:45 says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. Now if we continually speak evilly of others, it indicates a proud heart, a haughty heart, a domineering spirit, a wrong condition of the heart.
To avoid gossiping, we should go to the throne of grace and to the word of the Lord and have our hearts filled with the Holy Spirit. And then we won't have nearly so much an inclination to meddle into the affairs of others and to gossip about others. James 3, verses 9 to 12, part of the passage we read earlier, approaches the subject from this standpoint. James says, "Therefore, bless we God, even the Father, or rather, therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place bitter water? And can the fig tree bear olive berries, either a vine, figs? He's saying that you don't get two kinds of things from the same source. And so, from the same heart, you don't get two kinds of things. If the heart is good, you'll have good words. If the heart is evil, you'll have evil words. Cursing men, as James speaks of, it doesn't necessarily mean swearing or using profanity. It also means anything that injures. And so, we must begin with our thoughts. The Apostle Paul in Philippians 3:8 gives us a guide for our thoughts. He says to think on whatever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise. If we concentrate on thinking of this kind of things, will be much less likely to be evil-speaking and be, to a greater extent, be able to control the use of our tongues properly. We pray that the Lord will help each of us to cleanse ourselves from this practice, which is so easy for all of us and which we need to put forth a greater effort to resist and overcome. Thank you.